Right now on the Daily Debrief, a lawsuit against movie producer Harvey Weinstein, filed by one of the most vocal actresses in the Me Too movement. A new attorney for a wealthy Connecticut man suspected in the disappearance of his estranged wife. And reaction to verdicts in two Florida murder trials. The first, saving a man from death row. The other, a possible compromise after a lot of troublesome testimony.
Did you tell him you murdered their mother?
No.
The state didn't get precisely what it wanted in either case. The Daily Debrief brings you the day in court. It's Thursday, October 24th.
Welcome to The Debrief, everybody. Glad you're with us. A look ahead tonight to the second murder trial for a Florida man who just yesterday learned he would spend life in prison for a different crime, murdering his pregnant ex-girlfriend. Markeith Lloyd admitted he shot and killed Sade Dixon, but he claimed it was self-defense. Lloyd also injured Dixon's brother in the process, and after leading authorities on a massive manhunt, he's accused of shooting and killing a police officer. Her death is for a separate upcoming trial, and that is where attention in this case is turning now. The jury in the Sade Dixon case and the related cases had to examine two aggravating factors for victim Sade Dixon herself. Here is how the jury decided those factors and the ultimate conclusion on the sufficiency of those factors for a possible death sentence.
We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. The defendant was previously convicted of a felony and under sentence of imprisonment or placed on community control or on felony probation or parole. Yes. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. The defendant was previously convicted of another capital felony or of a felony involving the use of or threat of violence to the person. Yes. B. Sufficiency of the aggravating factors. Reviewing the aggravating factors that we unanimously found to be established beyond a reasonable doubt in Section A above, we, the jury, unanimously find the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a possible sentence of death. No.
Next, the recommended sentence for the killing of Sade Dixon's unborn child.
A. Aggravating factors. The defendant was previously convicted of a felony and under sentence of imprisonment or placed on community control or on felony probation or parole. Yes. The defendant was previously convicted of another capital felony or of a felony involving the use of or threat of violence to the person. Yes. Sade Dixon's unborn child was a person less than 12 years of age. No. Reviewing the aggravating factors that we unanimously found to be established beyond a reasonable doubt in Section A above, we, the jury, unanimously find that the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a possible sentence of death. No.
Immediately after that verdict, Markeith Lloyd's lead defense attorney nodded his head to the jury. Then, shortly later, he and his co-counsel embraced the defendant as the judge wrapped up the proceeding and dismissed the jury. The defendant showed a rare smile as deputies led him from the courtroom, even blew a kiss to someone in the gallery. He's done that a couple of times at the close of the day's proceeding throughout the case. Reaction poured in after that verdict. The local sheriff said the death penalty was made for people like Markeith Lloyd. The local police department, however, said it respected the jury's decision. Lloyd's lead defense attorney responded to the sheriff on the Law and Crime Network earlier today.
Several of his officers brutally beat my client when he was arrested. And, you know, the 18th Judicial Circuit prosecutor who was appointed to investigate that did a thorough investigation and found that, you know, there was no use of force. Where the use of force was justified, it's outrageous. It was seen on helicopter footage where my client was on his stomach and they were beating him with a rifle. So, you know, this is the country we live in. The sheriff, he has a right to his opinion. He has a right to hate my client. He has a right to want him dead, but he also has a responsibility as a elected member that he's not only answering to the, you know, pro-death people, he's answering to the entire community.
The defense also addressed the likelihood that Lloyd may press an insanity defense at his upcoming trial.
You know, the interesting thing that really didn't play out in this case is that, you know, there are 33,000 pages of Facebook material that was obtained from Marquis' Facebook page at the time that the feds executed a warrant after he killed Miss Dixon. And there is a lot of really important information about his state of mind. And so I think that that's going to play a deeper because essentially he gets out of prison in 2014. And so between 2014 and his arrest in 2016, he becomes an avid Facebooker. And he's ranting about racism and mistreatment and mistrust. And there's significant evidence of paranoia. And I didn't get into all of that because it wasn't necessary for this case, but it may be necessary for the next case.
One of the experts the defense is relying upon to determine its tactic in the upcoming trial, testified in the first trial that Lloyd was psychotic.
I think Mr. Lloyd is psychotic. I think Mr. Lloyd, on top of being psychotic in the usual clinical sense, as we define psychosis, I believe he is a paranoid schizophrenic. I believe in addition to that, he also suffers from what I think is an extreme example of cultural paranoia added on top of his clinical problem. And he also has certain developmental problems as well that could be mentioned.
Did Mr. Lloyd voice to you that he believed someone was trying to kill him?
He said the police was trying to kill him. That's what he said. He said the police are trying, the crackers are trying to kill me, the cops are trying to kill me.
He used the word crackers?
Several times.
Police?
Several times.
Orlando reporter Ray Caputo tells Law and Crime that the community expects a lot to come out in Lloyd's next trial involving the killing of Sergeant Deborah Clayton.
I can't say that I'm completely surprised, because Lenneman made a pretty good argument for his client in court and humanized him. You know, up until this trial, we didn't know a lot about Markeith Lloyd other than the ramblings he had. So I guess I'm not surprised. Now, if justice was served is a different question. We know that the state wanted to put Markeith to death. They have another trial coming up. They can still do that. Sade Dixon's mom was not too happy. She believed in an eye for an eye. And she thought that Markeith Lloyd deserved to die and not have a life just like her unborn grandson. I think the guy's life is just tragic, because clearly he has a sense of morality in his own eyes. Like he's talking about at times helping people with their power bills. But I mean, at the end of the day, he's a contradiction, because he's on trial for murdering a woman who was pregnant. So, you know, he does humanize himself. He talks about his kids, and that's something we never saw from Markeith. Up until this trial, all we heard about was this cold-hearted killer who was on the run and had murdered his pregnant ex-girlfriend and an Orlando police officer. But he did a solid job, though, you know, in his own odd way of showing that he is, you know, a human being. But this guy's life is tragic. He could have been a lot of different things.
Our guests tonight are attorneys Eklund Mercy and Mike Korobanek. So, Mike, let's start with that final thought there, humanizing the client. Apparently, in the minds of this reporter who watched all this go down locally, that tactic actually worked and spared a death sentence, at least this time around. What do you make of it?
I agree with him. I mean, I thought it was a very interesting insight into his thought process, and some of the things he said, he was actually, to me, educational. I thought he educated the jury. I thought he did a good job.
Eklund Mercy, the defense told Law and Crime earlier today that politics were swarming behind this whole proceeding. The original prosecutor said that she didn't want to pursue the death penalty. This is that jurisdiction where the governor brought in a new prosecutor who would. Is that process fair, to sort of watch all the political wheels turning behind a legal process? Does that irk you a little bit or not?
Oh, my spirit is weary. So here's the thing. I can't, because it just, let me tell you, this next trial, I believe that Mr. Lloyd's attorney is going to light them up. Just the fact that Mr. Lloyd no longer, with the whole adage of eye for an eye, just the fact that he doesn't have an eye because of the police kicked it out is just so telling. And then another thing is that with regards to the statement by Dr. Nunn, this black psychologist, it just goes to why diversity in mental health is so important. He said that Mr. Lloyd was psychotic. He said that, but and used cultural paranoia, while the other psychologist, a white psychologist, said, "Oh no, he's just a narcissist." So I think that this also gives way for a possible appeal. But Orlando should be very wary that this attorney is going to just bring it on, because there's so many implications by having the political implications. It's just so telling, and I just can't wait for this trial.
Oh, it's going to be a big one. I mean, this was just sort of like the warm-up lap, I guess, to the trial of this poor police officer who was shot in the line of duty here. Mike, what do you make of the mental health aspects of this? Is this going to be a solid defense if there's a defense of insanity in the shooting and killing of that police officer?
I think there's an interesting term that I'm really not that familiar with, but cultural paranoia has really intrigued me and piqued my interest into this defense, and something I'd look into further, because it was brought up by all the psychiatrists in this case.
So certainly much to argue about here from the defense standpoint as we watch this next trial go forward. It's on the calendar. We're going to watch it, of course, here on the Law and Crime Network. Let's turn to other news now. Funeral services held today for the victim of a police shooting in Fort Worth, Texas. Tatiana Jefferson died when Officer Aaron Dean shot her through her bedroom window while he was investigating a call that her door was open. Attorney Lee Merritt, who is representing her family today, said after the funeral, "Nothing can be said to justify us being at the funeral of Tatiana Jefferson today. No words can ease the pain of this family or relieve the tension of the community. That requires action, concrete, effective, specific action to address this culture of rampant police brutality." Keep in mind, Fort Worth Police Chief Ed Krause and several dozen officers attended the funeral today and wore ribbons to honor Tatiana Jefferson. Actress Rose McGowan is suing movie producer Harvey Weinstein, alleging racketeering and an attempt to trash her career before she accused Weinstein of rape. The suit names Weinstein, attorneys David Boies and Lisa Bloom, and even an intelligence firm from Israel said to have been hired by Weinstein. The suit, in its own words, says Weinstein had a sophisticated team working on his behalf to systematically silence and discredit his victims. Weinstein has denied having non-consensual sex. His attorney has called McGowan a, quote, publicity seeker looking for money. Still ahead tonight on The Debrief, a look at an upcoming hearing in the case of a missing Connecticut mother. Also, reaction to a complicated verdict in the case of a Florida man convicted of murdering a doctor. That is after the break. A court hearing tomorrow for the Connecticut woman charged in connection with the disappearance of her ex-boyfriend's wife. Michelle Traconis is charged with hindering prosecution and tampering with evidence. Wife Jennifer Dulos disappeared May 24th after dropping her children off at school. The same charges are pending against estranged husband Fotis Dulos. Another attorney is joining his defense team. Attorney Chris Latronica is joining attorneys Norm Pattis and Kevin Smith, who are already on the case and will remain on the case. Pattis is meanwhile appealing a gag order requested by the state and which has been granted by a local judge. Pattis says Dulos has a constitutional right under the First Amendment to fight back against police leaks in the case and should not be silenced. Let's move now to this week's verdict in the trial of a Florida man accused of murdering a doctor with a hammer. Teresa Severs did not show up to work, so another doctor checked on her at home and found her beaten with a hammer. Nothing, including money, had been taken from her home, and police think her husband is the one who asked for help to kill her. Investigators say the husband, Mark Severs, hired his friend Curtis Wright and Wright's friend Jimmy Rogers to kill the wife. Wright cut a deal and testified against Rogers. Severs, the husband, faces a separate trial later on. Here is the verdict, which came down yesterday in the case against Rogers.
Verdict. We, the jury, find as follows as to the defendant in this case. First degree murder, check only one. The defendant is guilty of second degree murder. If you found the defendant guilty of second degree murder, answer the following question. Do you unanimously find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant carried, used, or attempted to use a weapon? No. Conspiracy. Check only one. The defendant is not guilty. Burglary. Check only one. The defendant is guilty of trespass. If you found the defendant guilty of trespass, answer the following question. Do you unanimously find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was armed or armed himself within the structure with a weapon? No.
Prosecutors today announced plans to seek the maximum sentence up to life in prison on that slightly lesser conviction legally. The key witness in this case, of course, was Curtis Wright. On cross-examination, Rogers' attorney asked Wright if he was indeed a hitman.
No, because I believe a hitman is a professional killer who kills for money only.
Did you not have an agreement to be paid in some fashion for this?
Yes.
You weren't in fact paid, were you?
You say we're not?
We're not, correct.
No.
You returned to Bonita Springs, Florida for the funeral of Dr. Teresa Severs.
Yes.
Did you see her children there?
Yes.
Give them a hug?
Yes.
Did you tell them you murdered their mother?
No.
On redirect, the prosecution said Wright and Rogers hammered out their plan. It just wasn't a good one.
It was a multiple conversations over a month period.
Was any of that frenzied?
No.
And at the time you drove down here to Florida, Mr. Rogers knew he had already agreed to come down here with you to kill Dr. Severs?
Yes.
There was nothing frenzied about that, right?
No.
Was there anything frenzied about him bringing the blue suits and the hammer and the cooler to Florida?
He didn't bring a hammer with him, but as far as what else he brought, no.
I'm sorry. The hammer, there was a hammer that he had in the garage. You told us he joked about being Destiny.
Yeah, it was something Mark had in the garage.
Dr. Seaver's Destiny.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Anything frenzied about that?
No.
In fact, he was making light of the situation.
Yes, it was made to be a joke.
The defendant's ex-girlfriend was, of course, the other key witness in this case for the state. She claims that he confessed to her.
I remember me bringing it up, saying that I knew that he had something to do with it, and he agreed with me. And I asked him if he killed her, and he said yeah. And then I asked him if he shot her with a gun, and he said no. And then I asked him how, and he said with a hammer.
Did that scare you?
Yeah.
Did he talk to you about how much money he hoped to make from the trip to Florida?
Yes.
And what did he say he hoped to make from the trip to Florida?
$10,000.
And did he tell you who was going to pay him that $10,000?
Not that I remember.
Okay, Eklund, Mike, let's talk about this verdict. Eklund, did this seem like a weird verdict to you, basically saying that this guy went from Missouri to Florida, but this wasn't premeditated because legally that's how the jury basically came out?
Yeah, because I think just based on the testimony, I can see why the jury did not find him guilty of conspiracy, because they would have to have a meeting of the minds. And technically it was like three students. It was just like one mind between all three of them. There was no thought out plan with regards to the money. I mean, even if you're, I don't know how hitmen work, but I think a deposit would be necessary. They didn't even get a deposit.
Yeah, they're going to do the job and then get paid later. Like, that's just, I mean, it's illogical. And Mike, what's going on with this Curtis Wright? He gets up on the stand and he's asked, are you a hitman? And he's like, oh, no, a hitman would be a professional taking money for a job. It's like, well, that's basically what you pleaded to, right? I mean,
he was amazing. He was amazing. I thought the testimony was just totally out there. It's just, this whole case is just, I think the jury just thought they didn't have a mind to meet, as Eklund said, and it was just really unbelievable. But I thought there was clearly a plan.
And Wright goes to the funeral? I mean, you know, it just doesn't get any more bizarre than this. And Eklund, the way the jury comes back on this, they basically say the hammer isn't a weapon. That's how they found on that. So the prosecution didn't get some enhancers in there because of that. They didn't kick it back up to first degree because the jury found that there wasn't a weapon used, so they didn't get it back up to first degree sort of through the back door, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, so here's the thing. But I think the jury was like, hey, we're going to try to do this murder. And, the plan goes terribly. And it's like, oh, Ham, she's here. where's your hammer? Where's my hammer? And that's basically what unfortunately happened. That's basically what it sounds like. It sounds ridiculous, and it sounds more ridiculous to a jury. So
exactly.
I think that they, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be watching this for the husband's upcoming trial as well. We've got one final story tonight, a Florida inmate facing new charges in a less than ordinary incident at a zoo. 40-year-old Jason Gibson is accused of feeding iguanas to an alligator at a petting zoo operated by the local sheriff down in the Florida Keys. Two other inmates turned him in after they were left distraught and heartbroken. One of the iguanas, a 13-year-old male named Mojo, was apparently too big for the alligator to eat, so the alligator killed it and left its body to rot. Working at the sheriff's petting zoo is supposed to be a privilege for inmates. So, Eklund Mercy, this sounds like snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. If you're in jail on one charge, you probably shouldn't try to do something to get additional charges.
Why? The issue is, it's like they're already in jail. It's like giving, it's like leaving a diabetic toddler with a Twix and leaving the room and not expecting them to do stuff with it. Like, what were they thinking? They're not in seminary. They're in jail. I don't understand. And then there's an alligator. Like, you should have thought better.
Okay, so mount your defense for this inmate, Mike Korobanics. Go at it. How do you defend this guy on the charge that he fed the iguana to the alligator?
He just couldn't get his mojo going in his...
Oh, I don't know if that's going to work in front of a jury. I think the best defense is that some people at the sheriff's department said, well, a lot of the iguanas fall in the alligator pit anyway, because that's what they said. I'm not making the facts of this thing up. Eklund, does that work as a defense? It would have happened anyway? Uh-oh, I left Eklund Mercy speechless, ladies and gentlemen. Eklund can't mount a defense. Ineffective assistance of counsel. Mike Korobanics, do the defense, do the closing argument.
Never bite off more than you can chew, even if you're an alligator.
Oh, no. Well, you know, we had to discuss this because it was the talk of the entire newsroom here at Law and Crime today, so we had to discuss it. It's another interesting case that we will watch. Eklund, I'm going to bring you back for serious conversation on another episode of The Debrief. Mike Korobanics, thank you for your insight and your witty sense at dry humor. That's all the time we have on The Debrief. We'll be back tomorrow with live coverage of cases around the country. Our coverage starts at 9 a.m. We'll see you then.